Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. When government does anything they have no authority to do, taking money to spend on things they have no authority to spend money on, that debt is fraud. Their actions are fraud. What they have done is, if they've created laws, it is what we call the cover of law, or the color of law. It's cover of law. Sorry. So, as we expose the truth, now there's a lot of, I find it interesting that there's people out there that are starting to get into our history, and that's commendable. But if they're not actually going through the key critical founding documents, and they're just finding these obscure things, then I guess that's about as good as maybe what one would find the Andy Rooney segment of the 60 Minutes. It's entertaining, and it's informational, and it might actually, you know, have some relevance. But the point is, we have to understand what they have the authority to do. Now, today happens to be, and I never do this, so this is going to be one of those shows that just sits out there as a show that was done for a specific day. Happy birthday, Marines. Now, what really got me stoked up this year about the birthday was Vice President Vance taking it upon himself and his available schedule to decide to celebrate the Marine Corps birthday in the middle of October. Today is our birthday. Now, I'm not sure when you celebrate your birthday, but I can tell you, if it's your 21st birthday and you want to celebrate it 3 weeks early, the bar is not going to give you a drink. That day has not happened. No point in celebrating it. Now, the 250th is kind of big. And so this happens to be the year of, you know, or the coming year, because the nation turns 250 next year as far as our Declaration of Independence, our claimed independence against Britain. And so are we celebrating our demise? Well, that's what this show is helping you kind of understand. If we're not functioning as the government we're supposed to function, and we are, in literal sense, a pretense government, then we got real problems. And we have to get a hold of our government. If the government is really we the people, then it requires you. And as a matter of fact, it doesn't require you. Everybody has to realize, I think everybody has to realize what's at stake. Now, I'm actually going to dive into the history of the Marine Corps birthday, and I'm going to get to the academic truth of what is the oldest service in the United States. Because yours truly goes through the documents of what powers were granted. And so when we look at getting back to the academic truth, when we look at the government powers, that we look at everything that the government has assumed, they're selling us outright. They've been waging warfare against us, economic warfare. And as a matter of fact, our Caesar today, or actually this past week or so, has come up with the epiphany that everybody gets a 2K, you know, pittance, or this stipend, a 2K stipend for the tariffs, the money we're bringing in from the tariffs. Now, folks, there's a lot of people that badmouth tariffs, but tariffs is just another use of the word of imposts. Imposts are not, don't have to be flat. Imposts don't have to be, everybody pays the same rate. And as a matter of fact, when we look around the world, not everybody is the same. not every nation is the same. There are devious, duplicit nations like China that don't deserve any credit. And as a matter of fact, we should actually strap on a tariff that matches the involvement, or I should say the subsidies, that the Chinese government, because there's not one Chinese company really out there that's independent, that, you know, that functions and operates literally on its own profits without the government's controlling it. Now, we here in America have the same problem. We don't live in a free market. We live in a mercantile market. And the government, you know, possesses all sorts of unconstitutional powers and created all sorts of unconstitutional regulations to regulate our corporations. And it all had to start way back when the marriage of the federal government to the corporations became necessary shortly after the Civil War. And so that is how America was able to make it to its next big move in basically creating a marriage of the federal government regulating all corporations within the United States, power it does not have in the Constitution. They needed to do this because the states were waging their own little protections. I didn't want to say war, but they were waging their own layers of protection to protect their own people from predatory corporations coming in to compete with their own internally, and so forth and so on. So if you're going to operate and conduct business within a state, the state has the ability to regulate you. If you're going to function, you have to register. Now, this is where I'm going to just poke those people in an eye, those legislators at the state level who are giving the big world global corporations a huge pass. You show me the revenues being brought in by the Dakotas, south or north, or any flyover state that they're bringing in from Google, who happens to make transactions on a daily basis in their state, and to the tune who knows what. But bottom line, those are transactions Google is making. This is business they're conducting within the state because they're riding over this beautiful thing called the internet. And therefore, they're making money, and each state is not doing... You see, the EU started standing up against these big companies. And so, the United States, we've been slumbering and allowing Facebook, allowing Twitter, allowing all of these big tech, Google, Apple, you name it, even Amazon. Amazon is operating and making transactions within your state because every time you click on a link from a Google, Duck, whatever search engine, there is a transaction where somebody gets paid because they put Amazon at the top of the list and you clicked on it and somebody made money. That, my friends, is a transaction that Amazon is paying. And Amazon's not reporting who they're paying to, nor is the person receiving the money reporting in your state the money that they're making, such as Google, DuckDuckGo, whomever, whose ever search engine is back behind these, you know, monetizing transactions. It's the same thing with YouTube. Every time somebody clicks on a link, there are transactions with almost every click today. It's not really that bad, but I mean, it's pretty bad, folks, when your state is allowing transactions and corporations to make money operating with full immunity. They don't have to report it. They're not being held to reporting it. It is so bad that Facebook runs advertisements they bombard you with. The same thing with all of these social media types of platforms. Same thing with even the news media platforms. They want you to allow advertisements to hit you so that they get paid. You go to their website, they make money, even though you may not be paying anything. Because these advertisements are popping into your window, they make money. That's a transaction, folks. And you've allowed that transaction to happen in your state. So it just boggles my mind. I cannot fathom why the states are more secure, or they're more resolved to take more money from you than even go to these corporations and say, you will now have to report. If you conduct business and you do not report, we will consider that a crime, and we will put a warrant out for the arrest of the CEO and maybe all these other people who have you know, like like those names, you know, those faces, like Bill Gates with Microsoft. You know, if your name and your face is associated with that, we'll arrest you too. We're going to hold you accountable because you've created a system that did not actually observe our laws. You thought you could get by our laws. But if you have transactions where you've made money from a transaction within our state, you're operating and conducting business. So, folks, we're living in this world where we are actually being, I'll almost use the word dissected. We're being cut in pieces and parts, and we're letting this happen. You, we, us have to stand up. And I don't know if it's not the proper language or English to say us have to stand up. We have to stand up. You, us, we, how about that? So as we look at what is the real solution, what we have to do, because we can't go swatting at every gnat out there, we have to demand full compliance. In other words, we have to create a very specific tool and we've got the tool that's in the Constitution. Anybody that violates their oath is gone. We have to demand full compliance. We have to demand that they actually give us laws to enforce Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. It is the supreme law of the land, and yet not one state, not one federal agency is enforcing that law. And there's a reason for that. Because they love being unaccountable. And yet, the law demands accountability. We actually live in a nation where the law demands accountability. That was added to the Constitution in this beautiful thing we call the 14th Amendment. Everybody that has anything disparaging to say about the 14th Amendment, I really question their motives. Because there are some really dark reasons behind that. But let me take a pause and basically let you know, because we're going through all this content. We just wrapped up the Constitution with Sean, myself, and Tammy. And so we're going to actually wrap it up tomorrow, technically. I think that's when we wrap it up. But nevertheless, when we have Tammy come back, we will actually kind of do a what did we learn. And I'd love it if you wanted to send some comments to what have I learned? What have you learned? Did you learn anything regarding the Constitution? That being said, we're going to start following the remaining track of everything that's happened since the ratification of the Constitution, because we've already covered the cod fishery bounties. We have not covered the Assumption Act, the Bank Act, the Whiskey Rebellion, and I think the next really big thing, because there's other stuff that we probably want to cover. I just haven't uncovered it yet. But the next step is the 1798 resolutions to stand up against federal tyranny. And that we have to cover that this year. These are the five critical documents. We've already got these on the academic source documents page. So please, 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 please start getting involved. Show people the academic source documents. Tell them to read along with those five documents we go through. If you do this, if you read along as we go through these five critical documents, the Kentucky Resolutions of 98, the Virginia Resolutions of 98, the Kentucky Resolutions of 99, the Madison's report on the Virginia Resolutions of 1800, and then Madison's notes on nullification of 1834. Those are the five documents. And again, we read these, but we don't read Madison's notes on the nullification. We just read the highlights. So you download the documents, you go through them, and voila. And if you don't have Word, then let me know. We'll put a PDF up there. But going through these documents will help you completely see there is only one course of action. That is to interpose. What does interpose mean? We have to take a stand. We have to stop them and say, you can't do this. We have to hold them accountable and say, where is your authority to do this? It's basically, we have to start enforcing Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Connecting the dots here for you. So all that being said, let me get into the funny thing that I find when it comes down to how history gets rewritten. Now, we've covered the Articles of Association. The Articles of Association, let me see here, I've got them right here. And I believe these were written in, originally started and signed, yes, October 1774. Now, the Articles of Association was the agreement of the establishment of Continental Congress to basically come together and meet in the city of Philadelphia, and basically giving them very limited powers, but basically it was more of a uniting of the colonies to petition the king. That was their intent. They didn't really create a government other than this board, which they called Continental Congress. Continental Congress had no power to call forth the militia. Congress had no power to really, you know, start anything. Continental Congress was literally, at this point, until 1776, an idea that needed direction. And it wasn't until they looked at all of the facts, and it took them a little less than 2 years, but it took them that period of time to finally realize that our only way forward was to abandon the British Empire and start anew and create the Declaration of Independence. So here's the rub. When Britain started attacking, each of the colonies operated on their own. Each of the colonies stood up in resistance in one way or another. Each of the colonies started petitioning the king. As this all began, and we go through this from the Tory Acts on. So the Tory Acts basically create, and the Tory Acts are those acts that Continental Congress started creating as the real fight began. The real fight began, as we know, the shot heard around the world, Concord. It happened in Massachusetts. Now, the way I think, why did it happen there? Why didn't it happen in Virginia or New York? Obviously, two larger hubs of more volume, more money, more importance. I believe that it happened there because the divine hand of providence knew the pride of the Puritans, that these people needed to be humbled and they could be used as the catalyst in uniting these similar, not completely like-minded, because they had their differences, significant differences, from labor, religion. I mean, if America maintained its separations where each state didn't join a union that they would agree that they wouldn't have economic war and these types of fights with each other, that they would get along, that the U.S. Constitution gave them, that the Articles of Confederation didn't give them, because under the Articles of Confederation, all of the big states were taking advantage of the little states. And by that point in time, when we went into the Constitutional Convention, the little states came in with a complete confirmation that they could not trust these big states. They needed protection from them. They needed to be assured that their sovereignty could not be meddled with by the federal government or by the big states, because that's what they were witnessing under the Articles of Confederation. So anyway, the Articles of Association, if I just said association for the last one, actually it was the Articles of Confederation that created a very bad, I'll just say, the tension was rife. It was so, the contention was so high amongst the different states, because the big states were being empowered to do whatever they wanted. The little states were, you know, Rhode Island was getting away with doing what it wanted to do, and what it was doing was really bad. So in moving forward into the Constitution actually created the conditions and an environment where all of the states had equal sovereignty and equal respect, which is why they had that equal suffrage in the Senate. And the states, by apportionment or by population, had their representation by of the people in the House of Representatives. So getting back to this government, when the shot was heard around the world, and as a matter of fact, the tension was really getting thick with these really prideful people in Massachusetts, where the Boston Massacre occurred, and John Adams stood up and he actually defended them and got them off. Now, John Adams did not make a lot of friends in Massachusetts under that. But as things began to progress and things were moving, it was happening really slowly, but in maybe their eyes, it was happening in blinding speed to where they needed to start getting recognized. And John Adams was recognized as the man with the common, you know, the clearer, you know, thoughtful head. And actually, that's how the Massachusetts folks saw him. But in dealing with other people, like in Congress, when he was the vice president and so forth, he was just a hothead. I mean, anyway, so I don't want to digress. I got about 2 minutes before the break, so I'll dive into the birthdays and all of that when we come back. But the point is this, is that Boston and Massachusetts was the hot point in America. There's no doubt in my mind this put the people of Massachusetts on their knees when Britain came in to occupy them. And it was Washington who came in with the help of the Massachusetts militia and the help of other states sending their militia. Continental Congress was basically lipstick on a pig. Basically, they had no authority to do anything. There were very few things that they actually did that, even though it was always dependent upon a state to actually do it, like the formation of the first Navy, I believe was Rhode Island. And I believe Rhode Island actually commissioned a couple of ships. But Rhode Island didn't give those ships to Continental Congress anytime soon. And as a matter of fact, Continental Congress, as we go through and we look at the services of what was being asked in creating this Continental Army, in creating the Continental Navy and so forth, Continental Congress had no authority. But they did call for one thing, even though they had no authority to do, it actually happened. And because of the ships that were being used in forming the United States Navy, they were private ships, because they didn't even have the money to buy and build the two ships they wanted. So they needed volunteers of captains or what have you to bring their ships forward and utilize them in as a part of what they would call the Continental Navy, not owning any of it. So the real history, when we come back, is going to be what was the first service that actually formed that was a, you know, that we have today? Is the Army something that was formed in 1775, 1776? And I'll say no. As a matter of fact, it wasn't until the Articles of Confederation were ratified, supposedly they say with Maryland in 1781, I'm here to tell you the Articles of Confederation were not ratified actually until 1783. So anything and everything Continental Congress was doing with a lot of license, and so we'll actually dive into that when we come back, because what Continental Congress had under the powers of the Articles of Association was literally nothing. They couldn't form an army, they couldn't do anything. But they did have their hands on a little bit of money and could pay for some salaries or what have you. And so when we come back, we'll dive into the history of the service's birthdays.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so we kind of covered the Continental Army, or I should say the shot heard around the world, and the response to Concord because this happened in 1775. And so this is when the first real official landing in Massachusetts occurred, which required the Massachusetts militia to kind of stand up. Now, Massachusetts militia was inept and incapable of actually doing what they needed to do. And as a matter of fact, even Washington, he was able to have some successes all the way into 1776 in Massachusetts. But that's really where the focus of the war was. And the slipping away under the cover of fog, Washington and his forces, became kind of a common thing of the Revolutionary War, because even though Britain had him completely surrounded, a divine intervention by a heavy fog allowed Washington not once, but I can think of twice, in Back Bay, Massachusetts, and in New York. He got away, he slipped away under the thick cover of fog. And it's ironic that the fog cleared because the commanders saw Washington himself sinking away in the last of the ships to safety, so that they could not trap the Revolutionary Army. Now, when we look at all of the hardships that this makeshift army was, it wasn't really an army. It was a group of colonies or states. By this point in time, they became states. They were, as far as they were concerned, they were independent and sovereign states when they declared independence. And by the way, they didn't really declare independence. Continental Congress did that. It literally required the states to say, yeah, we're on board with that. Because Continental Congress didn't even have the authority under the Articles of Association to even make that kind of declaration. And though it be bold, it was embraced and accepted, because I think everybody saw that Britain and its reaches, they were not going to rest until they had full control of these colonies. These colonies were too big to allow to get away. There was too much money here. And everybody knew it. Even Adam Smith in 1776 stated that in his Wealth of Nations, that the colonies of America, this is what he put in 1776 in his book. He said, if these colonies got together and they improved their throughput, the highways, waterways, and the ability to move commerce in and out of America to overseas and back, they would become the economic force. Because if you look at how large America was by this point in time, people kept on leaving Britain to come to America. I have no idea what the total number of, the population, I should probably check, and it's probably worthy to even know, in 1776 or 1770, what was the British Empire population in contrast to the colonies? And then add all the colonies together, there's no doubt in my mind that there's a higher number of people living in the colonies than in Britain. We're talking 6-9 million There's just, I don't think that they were even close to that in Britain at that point in time, because Britain didn't include some of these other outskirts that, you know, didn't want to be a part of the British Empire. Anyway, all this being said, Continental Congress wanted to actually, and they created some orders for, you know, to go forth to establish the army. I think it was like June 14th, maybe, something like that. Anyway, so they basically said, we need to establish the army. Well, they didn't have the ability to do that. And actually, what they started working was they were working on recruitment plans, like they eventually started offering freedom to black slaves if they would join, because the states were pretty apprehensive. As a matter of fact, if you look through the history of the Revolutionary War, at the very beginning, some of the states were pretty willing to send some of their militia independently over to George Washington to basically support his efforts. This was not forming a, this was not a legal, you know, power that was created. This was the cooperation of independent states trying to help each other. Big difference between under the formal auspices of Continental Congress, this occurred because they ordered it to be so. They didn't have that power. So when they created what supposedly was this army, this Continental Army, and some people call it the Minutemen, and I believe the Minutemen was actually a state militia, I think it was Massachusetts militia, but nevertheless, the formation, the army claims this formation, June 14, 1775, as their birth, and I'm here to say, that really didn't happen, because the Continental Congress didn't have the authority to do that. Continental Congress, under the powers of the Articles of Association, did not have that power and authority. Now, they did the same thing with the Navy. And in October of 1775, they said, you know, we need to have a Navy because we need to be able to stop Britain before they get here. If we allow them to constantly land here, then we're just going to have a greater fight and a greater fight and a greater fight. So we need to be able to stop them. So they came up with this plan of, you know, buying two ships that would be outfitted for warfare, because for the most part, at this point in time, the Americas weren't warfare colonies. They were commerce colonies, fishing and so forth. So what they had was they had a few volunteers who had fishing ships or cargo ships, what have you, that they brought forward to say, you know, I will use my ship to support the effort. Congress couldn't even pay for it. They didn't even have the money to buy, because ships at that point in time were pretty expensive. But they did have time and money to pay for labor. Interestingly enough, after they created or penned this thing called the Continental Navy, they didn't even have the authority to pay for or create, but they had this, you know, these real noble men, these noble sailors who own their own ships, that come forward with their own ships to basically establish a ship, an armada, what have you, a small little naval force to kind of help protect, the United States from the incoming Navy. Or incoming British Navy. So what they did have was they had the ability to actually man these ships with what we want to call maritime soldiers, or what we call today Marines. Now, I haven't done the history on merchant Marines, but somebody, I'm going to tell you right now, somebody really does want to get a hold of me, and they're going to have to wait, because it's all about the Marine Corps birthday right now. And I say that because the Marine Corps birthday was literally born November 10th, 1775, where Congress basically says we need to hire some men to put on these boats to basically attack the British Navy or the British fleet that's coming here and steal their ships. Which basically, if you really look at it, there were actually battle plans and other things that they wanted to use the Marines for. But for a defense system, and you got to understand, we didn't have radar, we didn't have anything like that. So you know, having ships trolling around in the Atlantic wasn't really very profitable just due to the fact that you had to be in the area when they were floating by. You know, it wasn't like we had any, I mean, there were indications of avenues of where they would come through, but because of the currents and so forth. But you really had to, you know, it had to be the perfect timing. So the intent was to steal ships from the British fleet and or other ships coming in that were flying their flag that we could take and actually acquire a naval force. Unfortunately, Washington didn't care, and you've heard me say this time and time again, Washington never cared for the Navy. But Continental Congress did have, and they actually did deploy and employ United States Marines, or I should say Continental Marines. So when you look at the reality of where the authority was and what they actually did under what they had, the little pot of money that they had, because the states weren't paying for Continental Congress. They weren't paying for the war. We already know the whole financial struggles of this little thing called Continental Congress, and some people were getting kind of fed up because it was becoming costly. You know, when you start a war in 1776, everybody goes, well, it ought to be over. How hard can this be? Well, it's going to be very hard because you're talking about fighting the world fleet, the world dominating force. This is the empire that's ruling the world today. So it's not going to be, you know, just a walk in the park. You can plan on it being a long war, and it was. It went 7 years. 7 years, and I'm telling you, the states started getting tired. They started getting exhausted as far as being able to fund this thing. This is one of the reasons why the war debt was such a problem. Well, we didn't really sign up for this. You did things that you didn't have the authority to do. Those types of insinuations flew around. Because until the Articles of Confederation actually became, you know, but what were they to do? These men went ahead without the funding, without the actual authority to try to get things done. And what they did get done was Washington was able to get, you know, by the handouts of other states, sending forces, sending, you know, replenishment, food, ammo, those types of things. Washington was able to at least keep Britain at bay in that first onslaught and then be able to get out of there and then start moving around and continuing to prosecute the war. But that came at a cost. And it's the same thing with this Navy problem. But the one thing, and Washington actually did use the United States Marines, or I should say the Continental Marines, in the Revolutionary War. And so he was supposed to have them, but they didn't show up in time for the Battle of Trenton, but the Battle of Princeton and some others, the Marines were there. Anyway, when we really look at where the authority and what could be done, the only legitimate force the Continental Congress could form was the Marine Corps. And its birth was Tun Tavern and Brewery in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, which is, you know, they're trying to resurrect that old building today and, you know, in a historical attempt of restoring that part of our history. Now, it's interesting when we really think about what academically, the true force that was created for the Revolutionary War was the United States Marine Corps. What we have today is what we call today the United States Marine Corps. The Navy was an idea. The Army was an idea. And as a matter of fact, doing the research, because the whole thing comes down to the birthday. Why is a birthday even important? Well, it's important if you make it important, right? I mean, I don't make my own personal birthday important. It's just another day. But there are people that, you know, in some ways their self-worth is the fact that they were born. And I mean, they celebrate to the hilt their birthday. So that being said, the Marine Corps was a very small force. Obviously, it was a department of the Navy. It was the infantry of the Navy. And when we really look at it, you've heard me as I go through the Constitution on this, the United States Marine Corps should actually be the size of the Army. The Army shouldn't actually exist. And actually, when we look at the history after the Revolutionary War, Washington was trying to do everything he could to keep the Army, because he was an Army man. And there was constantly this creation and letting go, and the services actually became desolate. I mean, they were just like non-existent. I believe in the Korean War, by the time the Army got involved and called into the Korean War, they were practically completely shut down, which is, you know, they had to do a whole bunch of recruiting, bringing people back in and so forth, just to be able to make a show at the Korean War. This was the problem that they were constantly having under this concept of not maintaining what you think is a standing army. What the framers told us a standing army was the ability for the king or the government to enforce their own laws upon the people. Because when you look at the function of this army, when you look at the function of the federalized army under the Constitution, their authority, and the only authority and force with the authority of the Constitution to execute the laws of the Union, is the militia or the federalized army. So we've covered this in a lot of detail. And there's no doubt in my mind that over the course of these identity crises of each of the services, we're practically non-existent. And that kind of happened after World War One with the Marines. And so go do the research and you find me pictures, because everybody loves historical views. Go find me pictures of the Army's 50th celebration of their birthday. That's a big event, right? Or how about the 100th? Nah, not finding that either. But actually, you will find the celebrations, pictures of Marines celebrating their birthdays. Going back to, I believe, just prior to World War II, or actually in between World War I and II. In other words, at that point in time, because the Marine Corps became such a small force, that they definitely celebrated the fact that they existed at one point in time and were on the brink of becoming non-existent. And so they celebrated their birth, they celebrated their tradition, where at that point in time, none of the services were. I can find no evidence that they even cared about their birthday. And as a matter of fact, I do have evidence, because I'm going to share it with you. And you can actually, Wikipedia sometimes can be very helpful when it comes to basic information and exposing information. And you'll find it interesting that in the Continental Navy, Wikipedia's, explanation or little snippet on the Continental Navy, they actually point this out. The United States Navy decided in 1971 to recognize October 13th as the date of its official establishment, giving it almost a whole month prior to the Marine Corps' birth. Well, technically, yeah, on paper, they had this idea of creating a Navy, but that didn't mean that they actually started making ships or actually commissioning ships. You would think that the first commissioned ship would actually be the first actual establishment of the Navy. It may be an idea on paper, but until you've got forces, enlisted, or you've got a ship in commission, you ain't got nothing. You don't even have an army, because everything you have is coming from the states. And the states are just cooperating with each other, this effort in fighting Britain. It's nice to have this Continental Army or this Continental Congress, but I'm just telling you, folks, who had the authority and what they did under that authority in creating the Marine Corps and enlisting, employing, and paying the Marine Corps. That was the absolute first Continental force created, period. And so, academically, the first So why is this important? Because when you look at parades and you look at the order of the forces as they march by the president, these national parades, the first goes first. In other words, the first force created, not the biggest force, not the most expensive force, because I think the Navy's probably the most expensive, but the biggest force being the Army. No, they don't go first because they're the biggest force. They go first because they claim to be the first created force. And because they've had such, I'll just say, influence within the United States government, beginning with Washington, even Monroe, there were always Army men deeply involved in politics in America. And you'll notice that Marines are very, very, I mean, they don't get into politics. They don't like politics. They, as a matter of fact, there's a very proud tradition in history about the Marine Corps. So there's a lot of people that love Smedley Butler and how he despised American politics. Chesty Puller was the consummate Marine, wanted to, you know, be in every fight, and he stood up and he took a round in every battle. Well, not every battle, but during every warfare. I think he had a purple heart for every war that we had and campaign and so forth. So the guy had lots of scars, but he was very politically incorrect. There was no way he'd ever become the commandant, because what he wanted to do, America would not embrace what that man had to say. And as a matter of fact, I'll give you another good instance, because everybody knows Clint Eastwood and Gunny Highway, right? Heartbreak Ridge. Apparently, the intent was to actually have the Army do that, and the Army looked at the character, and this drunken, you know, old school guy was not the image that the Army wanted to have. So they went to the Marine Corps and said, hey, would you mind doing this? Because they were going to do this at Fort Bragg, and they ended up doing it at Camp Pendleton. Because the Marine Corps knew that, you know, it's about the history and tradition of being hard, being what you have to be to win. And so there are lots of little, I'll just say, interplays and zinging with in between the sibling forces or the sibling services of the United States. But the Marines are lucky that we have so many sisters in the armed forces. In other words, our sister service the Army, our sister service the Air Force, our sister service the Navy. And as a matter of fact, when people say, hey, well, the Marine Corps is a department of the Navy, we have to quickly point out that, yes, it is the men's department. So there's always these little positions. But the reality is this, folks. Academically, the Marine Corps is first. And when it comes to national recognition in parades and everything else, that should be the Marine Corps that walks by first. Because they were the only ones that were legitimately created and actually created as a U.S. force, or as I should say, the Continental Force at that point, because we weren't United States. The point is this, is that when we want to understand what the real truth is, then we have to start going, well, why is it other? Why is it something other? Well, because having that first notch, having that first place helps defend your cause, helps defend, you know, all of the monstrosities, you know, or I should say the grand expenditures and the grand image you're trying to create. Folks, I'll go back to the Constitution, and I believe that technically we should actually be able to go back to the militia, get rid of the Army and Air Force completely. Everything that the Army and Air Force possesses outside the United States shifts to the Navy. And the Navy and the Marine Corps are and the only strategic force that was created under that Constitution to protect the United States from any object outside of the United States, i.e. outside of the orbit of Earth, outside the boundaries or outside our shores and across our borders. So when it comes to defending America, the Navy and the Marine Corps are the only constitutional force for strategically defending threats outside of the United States. So let's get the militia actually back into where it needs to be, because this perversion of having this grandeur of being the world global force of the Army and the Air Force, folks, we need these guys at home. We need these guys in your counties. We need you to actually start executing the laws of your county, executing the laws of your state. Had we actually employed the militia in the design that the Constitution gave us, how every state would have then built up its militia as its executors, instead of creating a state police, instead of creating municipal police forces, these mercenary forces, manning it with the militia and creating a working system by using the militia as our law enforcement and our peacekeepers, you know, to suppress the insurrections, to suppress riots, or to ensure that the laws are being abided by. If we had done that, then I think America would be in a completely different position. Had we actually maintained the Navy and the Marine Corps as our external guards and not become, you know, boots on the ground, because the Marine Corps is never going to become boots on the ground. We're not to hold other nations. That's why we don't have bases, you know, overseas. You know, when you have an occupying force, that is antithetical to our Constitution. This would have forced us in the paradigm of saying, you know what? We have no really business getting involved in your wars. If you want to actually, you know, get away from these types of politics and these worldly, problems that you guys are creating, then why don't you just become a state of the United States? And that would have been the huge difference that would have kept us from having to deal with the League of Nations and the United Nations, and these grandeur ideas from these evil globalists. We wouldn't have the globalists today in the position that they're in because the United States would not have gone down these paths had we maintained the real spirit and design of the Constitution. Done. We would not be where we are today if we would not have had these evil men who took office that wanted to actually create nationalism and start creating industry by death instead of industry by peace. We were winning in almost every facet and in every way whenever we stepped up, whether that be mining, whether that be manufacturing. It didn't matter what we were doing, we were winning in America. In every capacity. I can't think of anything that we weren't the best in. Why did we allow ourselves to, you know, for the globalist cause, start going and subsidizing these other nations and building them up? We should have allowed them to make their choice to either become a part of us instead of helping, because bottom line, I've said this for years, we've been subsidizing communism for well over a century. Well over a century, going back before Lenin got out of Canada. Folks, happy birthday, Marines. Folks, understanding the truth of our history and the reason why we're in this situation, this conflict between the Army, Navy, and Marine Corps, it imbues that problem. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.